Their job is to witness. Their job is not to advise, to give helpful hints. Let me tell you how you can work through this, because advice without permission is always criticism. So you avoid that completely.
I like that.
Yeah.
Advice without permission.
And that's the problem solving thing that we try to do when we shouldn't.
Right.
Welcome everyone to podcast number 182, Renew Your Mind. With us today, we have a lot of people today. We have Senior Pastor Paul Gruenberg. We have Associate Pastor Jeremy Tarrou. We have Retired Pastor Barry Sweet. We have our Praise Leader, Youth and Family Director Jordan Kettlewell. Myself, Dana Hall, is the moderator. And we have a very special guest again, Julie Kettlewell. So we have kicked off a series on mental health. And this series, we want to talk about grief. So, Julie, can you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you do?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Well, as Dana said, my name is Julie Kettlewell. I am a certified grief educator. And what that means is that, it means I took a really, really, really long course on the topic of grief. And now what I do is I educate others to go out and work as support people for people in grief. They can form a support group, bereavement group, do one-on-one, support for people. But it's, and people are already doing that. But my job, my main job, is to raise the bar on grief literacy. Because the truth of the matter is, we live in a grief illiterate world. Mm-hmm. Most people don't know this much of what there is to know about grief. I thought I knew a whole lot about grief because I've done so much of it and I've lived through so much of it. And so you think, well, yeah, I know pretty much what there is to know, and I know the things you should say and not say to somebody in grief, and I know what it feels like, and I had no idea what I didn't know about grief. And it took a four-month course for me to really, truly understand it. And so I look at myself as not just a grief educator, but as a warrior. I have waged a war on grief illiteracy. And I'm going to attack it in this community. And I am going to raise that bar. And I'm going to educate other people to help me raise that bar.
Good.
And we're going to just create a wave to help people better understand the topic, because it is so tied into mental health. Grief is not, in itself, it's not a mental disorder. Grief is grief. It's a part of the human condition. However, the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, has recently added prolonged grief to its list of mental disorders, because prolonged grief is when your grief has gone beyond what is healthy, that you're not healing, you're not letting go of some things, and it has started to affect your life. You can't work, you can't think, you're maybe not taking care of your family, you're not taking care of yourself, you're not eating right, it affects your whole life. And the point of grief support is to help people heal to the point that they move through that and they don't get to that point. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't ever get the support they need. Because what I found out is there really are very few grief support groups anywhere in this area. We have one here at the Gaylord Methodist Church, and I'm really proud of that, and we are expanding that. My goal is to get one in every church in this county, and not just the churches, but the nonprofit organizations and the homes where the elderly live, and the because grief just transcends age and society levels. It's so prominent, yet it's never acknowledged.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, because everyone is going to, not everyone experiences a mental illness. Everyone's going to experience grief.
Everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone. And it's there's no avoiding it.
So you said you were grief illiterate. So I'm mm-hmm. probably grief illiterate. So can you tell us what grief literate means?
Grief literate.
Oh, well, maybe, okay. Maybe how would you define grief? Could you give us a working definition of grief from your perspective?
Oh, wow. That's, I have to do this off the top of my head.
Just need layman's terms.
I know what grief literacy is not. And it's basically what all of us think grief is. We don't know the first thing. But to be grief literate, you understand, number one, how to approach someone who's in grief. It comes right down to, what do you say to someone when you go to a visitation at the funeral mm-hmm. home? Mm-hmm. Here's the things that are okay to say. Here are the things you should never say, because you're going to take that person who is already grieving and just, you know, put them into a state that they can't see straight. Okay, there are some very, very hurtful things that a lot of people say that they've been saying for years because they thought it sounded okay, not okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's part of grief literacy. Knowing the terminology is important too. When you're, and I'm going to speak from the educator point of view, who's I'm going to imagine you're all going to run a support group, and here's what I would tell you. We would start with grief 101, the terminology. You know, what is mourning versus bereavement versus grief? Mm-hmm. What is sympathy versus empathy versus compassion? Those words aren't synonymous, but people use mm-hmm. them interchangeably, mm-hmm. yeah. and mm-hmm. that's not correct. And here's a really interesting point about that, about terminology. And I'm probably jumping way ahead of myself here, but when I first explained to the group that I recently trained, actually it was here at our church, and I said, you know, you have to understand that being sympathetic is great, being compassionate is great, being empathetic is great, but there is not a place for empathy if you're going to be there to support someone. Because in a grief support group, the leader, the person who's running the group, their job is to witness. They're not. Their job is to give helpful hints. Let me tell you how you can work through this, because advice without permission is always criticism. So you avoid that completely.
I like that.
Yeah.
Advice without permission.
And that's the problem-solving thing that we try to do when we shouldn't.
Right. And that's a hard thing. And so if you're an empathetic person, which I'm very empathetic, I mean, if somebody bangs their arm or hurts their arm and they're crying, I feel it on my arm, and I feel it inside and my stomach turns a little bit. So when somebody's in grief and their heart is breaking, I feel like, you know, mine's breaking too. And I'm going, how can I help them? Because I've already taken on their pain. But as a grief support leader, you cannot take that pain on. And so empathy has to be taken out of the picture. And I guess the best way to describe this is I use this on our group, and it really opened some eyes. It's, let's say you're walking along and you fall into a hole that's 30 feet deep, and you break your leg and maybe your arm, and you're laying there for days, no food, no water, nobody's around, you're crying for help. Finally, somebody comes along after you've been suffering, and they're standing on the edge of the hole, and you look down and you go, oh my God, I feel your pain. And you jump in so that you can feel their pain totally. Well, they don't want you in the hole with them with a broken leg and a broken arm. They don't want you to feel how they feel. They want you to stay up there and get them out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a good weird analogy for.
No, it's a great analogy.
Very
good.
Good analogy.
That put it in simple terms.
Yes.
And when I said that, the eyes got big and everybody went, wow, okay, I thought I was supposed to be empathetic. No, you're supposed to be compassionate and you're supposed to be a listening ear. Because when people come into with their grief and they're already nervous because, you know, you might not know everybody in the group and they don't want to bare their soul and, you know, tell everybody how awful they're feeling because they don't want to look foolish or silly. Like, geez, they don't know if anybody else felt that way. Because when you're in grief, it's all about you. You become very egocentric. And you think nobody's ever felt like this before, when the truth is almost everybody has felt that, but not in the same way. Because, and again, when you're acting as a grief support leader, you have to always remember their pain is not your pain. Their grief is not your grief. You're there to witness. Mm. You're there to listen. You're there to help them heal. Then as they start to, most people won't go into a support group when they're in the acute stage of grief, which is right after the death. But somewhere in the early stage, in the first year or two, they might decide, I think I'm just going to wander into that group and see what it's all about. And as they start going through that and they start talking with other people and listening and you witness their grief and listen to them, then where this grief education comes in, the leader can start applying their new knowledge of, okay, this is how we would handle this situation. This is how I can help this person without giving advice, because that is criticism. And so it's just such a delicate road to navigate, because everybody that's in that group is going to be at a different stage of grief.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to know. But that's where the education comes in, is you can pick up on cues, just like a mental health, just like Jesse was talking about, is that you listen, you pick up on those cues and you go, ah, I see what we're dealing with here. And also when it gets to, sometimes it gets to a point where you know you can't help a person anymore and you need to refer to a professional. Because grief support facilitators aren't professionals, they're there to listen and witness. Mm-hmm. But it's a great way for people to begin their healing process in grief. And again, I think I got a little ahead of myself, but it was actually a good jumping off point.
No, well, that's really good. I already have, like, of course, problem solving questions. Like, the first question that came to my mind is, you know, when that person's in the educator role, you know, how do they witness? Like, what are specific examples of how they can witness? Or and my second question really quick is, when you're at the funeral, what are the things you should say versus the things you should not say?
Okay.
Because I always feel terribly 100% unprepared.
And there's, like, it seems like no matter what it is that comes out, it's always the wrong thing.
It always sounds awkward. And
yeah, there's just nothing ever feels quite right. Mm-hmm.
Or adequate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Exactly. Nothing's adequate no matter what.
That's
so
right.
What do you say? And I think, like, you know, you brought up a really good point where there's certain things that are just always hurtful, even though it's never meant that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think if we, like, start even with
what not to say.
And that's what I was just going to say is that I wish I'd brought my lists. I honestly didn't think we'd had time to get to that. But if we're going to start there, then I can't remember all of them because there's quite a long list, but I know for sure some things that you should never, ever, ever say. And one of the things is, first rule, never start the sentence with at least. at least you can have more children. Mm. At least they lived a productive life. Mm. At least this, at least that.
At least they're going to be in heaven.
Yeah, at least they're in, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at least they're in a better place. And you know what my first reaction was when somebody said that to me? I didn't just think this. I actually said it out loud, and I probably really hurt that person. They might have turned around and left the building. I don't know, but I said, actually, I think the better place would be right here with me right now. Mm-hmm. And this was at the funeral. Okay, so, you know, you don't start it with at least. In fact, you just don't even tread those waters. Mm. There's quite a list of things. Actually, I should, if we do another podcast, I'll bring that list and we can go through it. But okay. But what I've found is, you know, again, people will walk up to someone who's mourning a death and they'll say, well, you know, he was taken way too soon. That one bothers me a little bit because, you know, where's the cutoff point? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. we don't sure. think about the what we're literally saying is mm-hmm. they were taken too soon. Well, at what point is it too late?
Right. I mean,
you know, yeah. if they're equal yeah. and opposite.
So at that point then, Julie, maybe the best things to say would be, I'm sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm. My condolences to yep. you and your family. Just simply acknowledging the loss and cutting it off. I mean, yes. with children, I've heard this said, God needed another angel. Why would you yeah. ever say that? It's because mm-hmm. you're not equipped
that's right.
to just simply, mm-hmm. you know, either be silent
that's right.
or just say, I'm sorry for your loss.
And well, that
aside from the fact it's bad theology.
I was gonna say, especially with that one, you're
the child's not in
you're offending and hurting the person who lost the child, but also right. letting them know that yeah, God wanted to take your baby.
Yeah.
Like that's
right.
It's yeah. a horrible right. thing all yeah. the way around.
It was their time. It's like yeah, was
people
their
can
time?
Be well-meaning yeah, when they say
they
yeah.
definitely yeah. mean yeah. well.
Yeah, and well, it's more likely they don't know what to say.
They don't know what to say, and there—that's rule number two. If you don't know what to say, say nothing. Sometimes just a hug, or you know, grab their hand and smile and say, "I'm so sorry." And we don't have to always feel like we have to fill that empty space with
right.
words. Mm-hmm. And we all tend to do that.
I think that's really important. Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
have to do that. And I finally got to a point a few years ago that I realized when I go to a visitation or to a funeral and I approach the bereaved and I knew the person very well, I will say, you know what? It was such a privilege to know him mm. or her.
Yeah.
It was my honor to be their friend or to be their coworker. And because if you can go up to someone who has just lost someone that they loved very much, the best thing you can do is say something that really glorifies the person they yeah. just lost, because they need to know too that their loved one was acknowledged, that people cared, that they knew them, that mm-hmm. That they made a difference in this world. Mm-hmm. And that can do so much to help heal a hurting heart. Mm-hmm. It really can.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Can I ask you this one?
Sure.
So this is another one that I think, I don't know if it's on the good list or the bad list, but based on what you said about, you know, if you're in a pit, mm-hmm. you don't want somebody in that pit with you. You want them to right. pull you out. And this is kind of a catch-22 because we've all experienced grief. And especially if you're talking about grief, loss of a loved one, we've all experienced, you know, a very similar grief if you're in like a group. The phrase, I know exactly how you feel.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
No.
Dangerous times
no, you
there.
Don't.
Right.
No.
Exactly.
No, don't.
It could be the same situation, but you're still two different people who
that's
process
right.
differently.
Yeah. That's right.
You never ever say that.
And
I understand.
It's an attempt to relate and connect.
It is.
Right.
It is.
I feel like that's one we fall right. into. If we can sure. relate, we want to try to say, right. like, I've been through the same thing.
Yep.
Well, no, you haven't.
Yep.
You've been through something similar.
Yep. You say, I understand how you... No, you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grief is like snowflakes.
There's no two
there
the same.
No two alike. Yeah. No wow. two people will grieve the same way. You know, and this is interesting. I'm just going to speak from personal experience here. And, you know, I don't know why I have all these notes because I haven't even looked at them yet.
that happens every time.
That's why I love these podcasts. That's why I watch them. I never know what's going to happen.
Neither do we.
I know. I know.
It's probably clear.
Now I forgot where I was going with this. Oh, yeah. From personal experience. Yeah. In our family, we had a whole string of losses, immediate family. It was like there was one month in 2020 that my niece was just being flip one day, and she didn't mean this in a bad way. She goes, oh, yeah, the death month. But she was right. I mean, she was right. But we had years, like a 10-year block, 12-year block.
Where we lost a lot of our family.
One. After another, after another, after another. But the one I want to talk about a little bit, and we started out talking about, you know, we were talking earlier about grief or trauma always has grief attached. Grief does not always have trauma attached. And here's a perfect example of this. I've lost two sisters, both of them younger than me. And my youngest sister, she was very ill, and it became time to call in hospice, and none of us could stand the thought of, like, putting her in a home or anything. She was in her 40s, you know, and it just didn't seem right. It just didn't seem right because she was our little sister. So we had hospice set up the bed in our house, and it was right in our living room because that's the only place we had to put that. And she was in our home for several weeks. My husband and I and my youngest daughter, who was still in high school at the time, so she was living at home. And we nursed my sister round the clock. And this went on for several weeks. And it was, at first it was very difficult, and then it became just kind of a spiritual experience because we felt like we were taking that journey with her. And what I was so surprised at was my teenage daughter, who would get up at night because she knew how exhausted I was and help my sister to the bathroom or do whatever. And I mean, how many teenagers do you know that would do that? But when that was such an education and such a real part of life for her. And when you're involved in a situation like that, and when the evening came that she did pass, the entire family was there, and all of her sisters and my mom and dad, and we all laid hands on her as she crossed over. So it was the most spiritual experience I've ever had. Now, my other sister who died in 2020, just 10 days after my dad died, it was right out of left field, didn't see it coming, like a brick to the head. And she was the sister who called me 5 times a day. So, you know, we talked
whether you wanted it or not.
Whether I wanted it or not. But I always answered because I just couldn't not answer because she was always having some sort of, you know, trauma. And so anyway, that traumatized me. So two sisters, same family, love them both equally. One, I'm totally at peace with the loss, not with the loss, with her passing, because I was there to actually see it and be with her and spiritually
walk through it with her.
Walk through it with her. The other one traumatized me so badly. I still sometimes, just during the day, I'll just be, you know, she'll pop into my head and I'll just feel tears on my face. Totally different thing. And this is why I'm saying that, you know, grief is so specific for every person and every situation. And, you know, even with kids, with parents, if a parent dies, every child in that family is going to experience it differently.
Right?
And so, and this is all part of the grief literacy of understanding how unique it is and how specific it is and how widespread it is, because everyone at this table has experienced loss, guaranteed. We sit in church on Sunday, guaranteed everyone in that church has experienced loss. Mm-hmm. And whether it was traumatic or not traumatic, yet it is so overlooked in our society. As a society, we are grief illiterate. And this speaks to an employer going, oh, well, if it was just your aunt who died, you can have one day off. Well, but that aunt raised me. I know, but the book says if it was your aunt, one day. Mm-hmm. Okay, if it was your parents, well, we'll give you 5 days, a sibling, three. And this is how a lot of companies mm-hmm. set up their mm-hmm. time off. Are you kidding me? I mean, that right. is just so wrong. They finally came through with a medical leave that
Family medical leave.
Yeah. And there should be one for mental health and grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there probably is one for mental health. I'm not sure. But grief is every bit as life-changing.
So, Julie, I'm going to ask a question for a practical purpose. For most people, they experience death usually as a kid, and it's a pet.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to help set people up regarding helping them to grieve, you know, the loss of a pet, which is oftentimes a family member.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
How would you coach parents to help their children with that loss? How would you help them or equip them to answer questions or whatever it is that the child needs at that moment, so that the child can begin to experience healthy grief or healthy grieving?
You know, it would so much depend actually on the age of the child, because whether they're 5 or, you know, 18 or, let's see, we lost a dog 3 years ago and I bawled like a baby. So, you know,
sure.
You know, they become part of the family. You would approach it differently. But I think the key and the most important thing is that you take time to honor that pet
mm-hmm.
and use their name, repeat their name. That's the other thing with grief literacy. People don't want to say somebody's name because, they're afraid of upsetting you or reminding you that they died. Well, you know they died. I mean, you can mm-hmm. say their name, and you should say someone's name. Mm-hmm. It's the same with a pet. Talk about that pet and talk about the remember when. Oh, and we remember when we ran through the woods and we were, you know, and we were picking mushrooms and he ran off and did this or did that. And then you talk about them. You have a little ceremony,
mm-hmm.
whether you're going to bury that pet or have him cremated, because they do that now.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. It just, the fact that it's acknowledged that it was a real part of their life and they will be missed.
Right.
But you have to just keep it real simple with kids because that does help. And I know back in my day when a relative died, we weren't taught anything how to right. even be at the funeral home. It was just terrifying. Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be that I have to be careful, or I'll at least defer to you, Julie. At what age would a parent want to bring a child to a funeral or to a visitation?
Number one, it probably would.
It's probably dependent on the child.
The child, the age of the child, for one, but more importantly, who was that relative or who was mm-hmm. that friend? Was it a sibling, a parent, an aunt, an
the
uncle, a cousin? What was
yeah.
the relationship and how did they feel about that that relative? If it's a sibling or a parent, you know, there's no question, of course, an entire family needs to be there unless it's an infant and that could disrupt the service. But, you know, in terms of aunts and uncles and cousins. Some cousins are like siblings. They're,
yeah.
you know, Jordan has a cousin that, you know, they were like twins. They were joined at the hip. You never saw one without the other. And, you know, so at any age when they were growing up, yes, Jordan would have attended that funeral because tight relationship. If it's an aunt or an uncle that they barely knew and they're only, you know, elementary school age, if they knew the person, maybe you could take them. But there is a kind of a script that you can follow with preparing them mm-hmm. for that and talking about what's happening. But again, it's different for every child because every kid hears things differently. Mm-hmm. They don't always hear what you're actually saying. We all know that.
You know, as parents, I would say rarely.
They rarely hear what you're actually saying.
Except Jordan.
So, so, you know, I have four children, and I would have to explain things different to each of them because
mm-hmm. yeah, they're all different.
They heard me differently.
Mm-hmm. I affirm that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all
so
different.
Did that answer the question?
Well, I'm just trying to help people who are listening.
Yes, right.
It's very individualized. Mm-hmm. And but again, speaking to the whole grief illiteracy thing, that's why the education is truly so important so that parents know what to say and people know what to do when they go to a visitation and and what not to say. And that's just so, I really wish I'd brought that list because I don't have it committed to
memory. No, that's all right because I think it's probably at the time where we can wrap this up, but we definitely want to have you on and with your list so we can have specific, you know, more specifics because we're so illiterate.
I didn't give anybody else a chance to talk. I'm sorry.
You did great.
No, you did fantastic.
That's right.
I should have warned you all ahead of time that once you get me started, there's no off button. So.
I warned him. No, I'm just kidding.
It just shows your passion.
I am very passionate about this. Could you tell?
So we'll look forward to hearing, you know, more and more specifics about the topic of grief. So is there anybody else want to say?
I think at this point we have her come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, Julie.
I would
love
to.
You're coming back.
Yes. You're coming back.
I'll be back here anytime you call in
all
a heartbeat.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, and you know what I could mention? One of the lists of the things to say and not to say is on grief.com.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And it's on page one, I think. And then in our grief support group, we kind of expanded on that and everybody had some
other
ideas. Yep. So I'll bring that to one. Okay. But in the meantime, people can go to that site. And
if any of our listeners, you know, if you want to hear anything specifically, please let one of us know so that we can follow up on that. But thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we come to you from the Gaylord Methodist Church. And we have two services on Sunday. We have a traditional at 9 a.m. and a contemporary at 10:45 a.m. We also have every other Wednesday a 7 p.m. Service that's more question and answer. And we'd love to have you join us in person. If you can't, though, you can view us via Facebook Live or YouTube. And if you have any other questions, just call the church or Google us, and we'd be happy to help you. We're also located at 215 South Center in Gaylord. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes.
Thank you, Julie. That was excellent.